from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. That's Roscoe Mitchell, a legendary figure in jazz. He grew up on the south side of Chicago, but teaches today at Mills College in Oakland, where he'll perform this weekend. We'll talk with Roscoe Mitchell about his career and how he teaches the art of improvisation. And then, in our second half hour...
I hear the church bells ring with the mazes up and back.
Music of a different sort. That's Chuck Prophet's new CD, Temple Beautiful, a musical homage to San Francisco. He'll perform live in our studio in our second half hour. Roscoe Mitchell and Chuck Prophet ahead on Forum after this.
Oh, and meanwhile, Carol Doda stood up and said, I won't be ignored. She showed him everything she had.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Have you ever wondered how a jazz musician is able to improvise? Does it come from the head, the heart, or some innate musicality? Roscoe Mitchell, the legendary jazz musician, composer, and teacher whose music we're listening to right now, has a more basic answer. It comes in part, he thinks, with practice, a skill that can be learned with teaching and the right set of tools. Roscoe Mitchell grew up in Chicago, where he says he could just go down the street and hear great jazz. Played the clarinet first, later the tenor sax, and was a founding member of the Art Ensemble of Chicago and the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians. In addition to his performing and composing career, he's also been a leading figure in academia, teaching at the University of Wisconsin and now at Mills College in Oakland, where he is currently the Darius Milhaud Chair of Composition and where a performance of his work will be held on Saturday. He is a multi-instrumentalist composer, and he'll also be performing at Yoshi's in Oakland Monday, April the 16th. And we welcome Roscoe Mitchell. Pleasure to have you with us this morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
To ask you first, and then we'll hear an example from a very early example of your work from the CD Sound in just a moment, but about this idea of being able to help people improvise. I guess I had always thought that improvisation sort of must come from somewhere inside, but you also think it can be something that can be guided, right?
Absolutely. I discovered after teaching many improvisational workshops, I noticed that inexperienced improvisers were making the same mistakes. So I set out to invent what I call a scored improvisation that addressed these mistakes. For instance, following is like being behind on a written piece of music. I wanted to have a look at that, so I thought if I put down materials that the musicians were going to be playing, then they would function more individually the way we do in an improvisation.
So what kind of cues, what kind of help can you provide?
Well, this is a system where each player is given six cards that fit together seamlessly, so they have the ability to shuffle their hands around, if you will. And that was another problem that I discovered. A lot of inexperienced improvisers, they don't know what to play. So I thought that if you give them something that they're going to play, then they can focus in on that and concentrate on really projecting the information that is there, the same way we do when we work on a written piece of music.
Give me an example. What would be, if I were in your class, what would be an example of a card that you would give me?
I would give you six cards based on your instrument that you're playing. If it's multi-instrumentalists, I would give them cards that where they're changing instruments, because then that brings about another thing that's very important in music, which is silence. Hmm. Silence is 50% of music. So when you're up against silence, you're up against a very strong foe, because silence is perfect. So then it's left up to us to decide how we're going to interrupt that silence.
Let's listen to something from Sound. This was your landmark CD in 1966. This is an excerpt from something called Little Sweet. And part of what you're doing here, is, as I understand it, is that you're also exploring what instruments can do and using them in a somewhat unusual and different way. So let's listen to a little bit, and then we'll have you explain some of what we're hearing. What are we hearing, Roscoe Misha?
I call this a little sweet because it has several different sections that go in it, and you're hearing the members of the sextet. They're switching around different instruments. For instance, it started with the harmonica there,
right?
And the scraping sound you hear is like a gourd with the ridges with a stick that you. You use to create that sound. Several instruments are used on this, the trumpet, the bass, the drums, the clarinet, the soprano recorder, that all go into shaping this suite.
And I also read one critic who said that it's an examination of music almost at the level of the wavelength. It's really getting at something that's at its most elemental. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think we spend a lot of times, because see, when we're younger, our mind is free, and then we get older, maybe not so free. So then we spend a lot of time trying to get back to that state of mind.
And is it to get at something that has not been heard before? Is it a sense of sort of discovering what is at the sort of the essence of an instrument?
That's part of it, but I think it was also largely due to the time. A lot of people were starting to take adventurous steps in music, and I'm part of that. I consider myself fortunate to have been in Chicago at that time when there were other musicians around that were thinking in the same way. That was good, and out of that came the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians.
Part of what intrigues me about listening to that is that you could listen to that and sort of think, well, they're just kind of doing whatever they want. But that's not right, right? I mean, it's very intentional.
Absolutely. I wish I could – if someone could explain to me how you can do whatever you want and it's going to be okay, I'd welcome that conversation. my experience has been that it takes a lot of work and a lot of practice.
And what comes from that then? What is that exploration reveal to someone who's really listening?
Well, I think the main thing is what you want is music to communicate. Mm. I think the work that we did in Chicago, we developed a whole community of people. We had our training program for young aspiring musicians. I go back to Chicago now to play, and I see people from way back then. So that makes me feel good. I feel like maybe I'm doing something right.
Roscoe Misha joining us this hour. He will be performing or work. Will you be performing tomorrow night as well, or is it just your work that will be performed?
Tomorrow it'll just be compositions that of mine that will be performed.
And that'll be at the Littlefield Concert Hall at Mills College. And then you will be performing with students as well, is that right, at Yoshi's on April 16th?
Absolutely. I'll be playing on the second set at Yoshi's. The first set will be two songs by E. Cummings for voice and piano. I have a piece for solo viola. There's another work for alto saxophone and piano. There's going to be a piece that involves these cards like we were talking about in the faces of roses for clarinet, bass clarinet, contrabass, clarinet, horn, strings, and percussion. And then for the last piece of that set, Ialto, Song for My Big Uncle, which will feature one of our students, Josh Marshall, who plays the tenor saxophone.
So in a way, it'll be for people to come to Yoshi's last night, it'll not only be a chance to hear your music, it'll also be a chance to see the way in which you teach and the way in which students can learn from that.
Absolutely. It'll give a closer look into the kinds of things that we're doing at Mills.
I want to play something now from the CD Space. It's called An Interesting Breakfast Conversation. Wonderful title. Before we hear it, do you want to set up for us a little bit what we'll be listening to?
Well, this I would describe as an improvised composition with parameters. Actually, Gerald Oshita and Thomas Buckner were getting together to rehearse music. And when I was I had the workshop at the Creative Music Studio in Woodstock, New York, I invited them to join me there, and then after that, we started to play together. So this is a piece that they had been working on. Gerald had was establishing the bass line, and Thomas Buckner was establishing his part in it. So I came along after that and put on the alto saxophone.
An interesting breakfast conversation. I love that. Did the title come before the music, or did the music inspire the title?
Well, this group, we spent a lot of time with having a lot of work periods. And with this particular recording, we had come out here to California, and we were in one of our work periods, and we were recording different improvisations. So we'd work most of the day, and then in the evening, we'd sit down and listen to the music, and then we'd put together conversations and titles, and this came from one time we were having breakfast together, and we thought, oh, that's a nice name for this piece.
When you say improvised composition, it feels like an oxymoron, and yet your whole point, in a way, is that it's not, that composition and improvisation go hand in hand.
They do. Improvisation on a high level is really spontaneous composition. I always encourage my students to study both composition and improvisation as a parallel. If you're sitting at home and writing a piece, you have time. You can say, oh, I like this idea, but maybe I'll come back to it tomorrow. But in terms of improvising, then you have to be able to make these decisions spontaneously. And it's always like if you're working on a piece, you have several different ways that you can go. And with an improvisation, you're in danger when all of a sudden there's only one direction you can go.
Each night, I assume, if you were doing an interesting breakfast conversation tomorrow, it might be different than how you might have done it last night. And yet the bones of it are the same?
Absolutely. Yeah, because we performed the piece live, too. It's not the same as that one. I mean, we have the parameters that we use to establish the piece, but it's always different.
Roscoe Mitchell, our guest this hour. Again, there'll be a performance of his music at Littlefield Concert Hall at Mills College tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Saturday, March the 31st. And he and his students will be at the Oakland Yoshi's, Monday, April the 16th at 8. Do you have a question for Roscoe Mitchell about improvisation, about his teaching techniques, or about the upcoming performances? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Let's listen next to another wonderful title, 8888, from Numbers. Tell us where that title came from, because it has lots of different levels of meaning, right? Because it also refers to piano keys.
Absolutely. That was part of it. And then I'm very interested in numbers. 8888, I started it in that year. It started off as a piece that I was writing for Joseph Cabrera, a wonderful pianist. And later on, I got a commission from Mutable Music to write the other two movements. It took me 10 years to finish this piece. It was a piece that I chose to write myself, and there was no commission for it at first. And normally the way it goes is you're working on commissions and so on, and you're doing that. But I was so excited by Joseph's playing that I wanted to write a piece for solo piano.
8888. Now, it has a sound that would seem to be more consistent night after night if that were performed, or not?
It would be consistent. It's a completely notated composition, so that would be consistent. We heard the second movement of that piece. That would be. Of course, you know, great performers put their own take on music. You know, we have wonderful performances by great artists that they stand, you know, and they stand as an original.
What does a composer give a great musician that a great musician, I'm thinking improvisationally now, doesn't get from him or herself?
You can get inspiration from a performer. One of the other pieces on that particular CD was done by my friend Hans Sturm, who is a bassist. And at that time, he was studying the extreme high register of the bass. So we would get together every morning and play these long tones, you know, 5 days a week from 9 to 11 for about a year. And then also there's another connection with that piece. It was performed by the 1750 Arch Ensemble in Nickelsdorf, Austria. And at that time, in the ensemble was Mel Graves, a wonderful bassist from here. And he had some improvised parts in the piece, and that inspired, you know, the direction I wanted to take when I was actually putting it down as a notated piece. I work both ways. I may get ideas from an improvisation, or I may get ideas from a written works that will inspire improvisation.
So would you sometimes, you know, listen to a group of musicians, in essence sort of study them, and then out of that would come a particular work?
Absolutely. My work with Vartan Manoogian, we were playing at a concert at the University of Wisconsin, and it was a concert of Joan Wildman's music, and we had some unison parts together. And when we played them, we both kind of looked at each other. It just felt right. And then we decided that we would go on and do some work together. I've never went out to look for musicians. They've always showed up. It's the same with the Art Ensemble of Chicago. We never went out to look for musicians. We played with the people that were there, and that I've always found that if you stay on your music and do what you're supposed to be doing, the other things work themselves out.
What draws you to a particular piece of music? Is it something that is more felt than explainable, that goes beyond technique?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, my older brother, Norman, got me into jazz. You know, back then they had the 78 records and they called them killers. And he would take me and sit me down and say, come on, let's sit down and listen to some of this music. And I think it's felt. And then that makes you want to get further into it. The thing about music, too, is like even as a musician, you have to do a lot of research on your own. You know, you get inspired and then you go out and do your research. And it just kind of takes you to a place like nothing else can.
Question emailed in from Paul in Berkeley, who writes, what's the difference between improvisation in jazz and a cadenza?
That's a good question. Cadenzas are either written out or they're improvised cadenzas. Right now, I'm studying early music. I'm going all the way back. And so I'm trying to learn how to construct all these cadenzas. And what I like about early music, there's an element of improvisation inside of it. If you see some music that's written the same way twice on the page, you are expected to embellish that music.
Give me an example of the early music you're studying now and what you're discovering in it.
Well, let's see. I mean, I joined up with the early music class at Mills. It's being taught by Louise Carlslake, and I'm learning so much from her because she plays this flute that I'm trying to learn, the transverse. And in fact, it's the flute that Bach and Mozart and all of these people wrote for. If you look at their music, you'll see that it never goes down below D, and that's what this flute is. It has six holes and one key on it. And so I'm fascinated by all of that, not to mention like the sound of the instruments also. Yeah, and a cadenza can work magical tricks, you know, in writing and so on. One of these pieces for Not Yet for alto saxophone and piano has two cadenzas in it.
So might we hear a future piece from Roscoe Mitchell that uses that sort of early instrumentation?
I hope to do that. I hope to do that. People are trying to encourage me. I mean, I think I'm getting better at it. You know, so.
Unfortunately, we're short on time, so we should get in our last example of your wonderful music. This is from Snurdy McGurdy and her Dancin' Shoes. It's called Stomp on the Far East Blues. There's a story behind this. It has to do with your daughter, right?
Absolutely. When she was younger, her shoes were starting to wear out and become a bit small, so we took her to the mall to buy some shoes, and it was a whole kind of a story of trying to convince her that she needed new shoes because she didn't want to get rid of her old shoes. So.
Well, let's listen to how you convinced her. This is Stomp and the Far East Blues. Roscoe Mitchell, it's been a great pleasure talking with you this morning. Thanks so much for being part of Forum.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Again, work of Roscoe Mitchell's will be performed at Mills College, the Littlefield Concert Hall at Mills College. That's tomorrow, Saturday, March the 31st at 8 o'clock. And then he and his students will be at Yoshi's in Oakland on Monday, April the 16th at 8 o'clock. Roscoe Mitchell, thanks again.
Thank you.
Forum, this is Forum on KQED.